Hi, everybody, and welcome to our Post-Shine VIP conference. This is our very first training that came as part of your VIP package for Shine, and it's on the healing power of herbs, so using herbs for health and healing. And this was something that I didn't really have time to do during the conference, and so what I did was I invited Lynn to share the stage with me tonight. And we're going to go through and teach you some things, some practical things about herbs. We're not going to make you experts on all these herbs. I've put a lot of herbs in the slides. If any of you have downloaded the presentation from the link that we sent out to you, you'll see that, oh my goodness, there's a lot of herbs in there. We will have a test at the end, and you need to pass the test in order to come to our next session. Kidding. But I wanted to give you some reference materials and really like talk to you about how do you use them in creating healing protocols for your clients. So we're going to start with our disclaimer. This information is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It's not medical advice. It's just simply a sharing of my background, my education, my experience in over 25 years of working with patients and clients, and any experts, in this case, Lynn, who have contributed. And we advise you to always make some sort of disclaimer at the beginning of any time you're either presenting to clients or even doing a one-on-one, just to make sure that they are aware that you're educating them, you're not diagnosing, and you're not treating. So that all out of the way, let's jump in and start with a little peek at what's coming. I always say, tell people what you're going to teach them, and then tell them what you taught them. So we're going to follow that model. So tonight's agenda, introduction. I'm going to start looking at the introduction. That's what I'm going to go through right here. Set the groundwork, the stage, allow people to filter in, because we have a lot more people that I believe are going to show up. They're just not in yet. It's interesting that no matter what time you set the thing for, there's always people that come later than what you set it for. And I'm like that too sometimes as well. It's kind of interesting. So if we had a 7 o'clock event, we'd have a bunch of people showing up at 7:10 or 7:15. So I'm anticipating that here as well. So we're going to start with the introduction. We're going to take a peek at what's ahead in terms of this training, this Post-Shine VIP training series. We're going to look at herbs from the wild with Lynn DeBure Johnson, and she has a great presentation on the herbs that you can share with your clients to just go out and pick and how to identify things that are actually probably growing right there in their yard. And then we're going to look at medicinal herbs that I've put together and some guidelines on how to use them in general, and then specifics of particular herbs for particular areas of the body, knowing that we're not looking at a this for that approach. We're looking at the overall mechanism of action of groups of herbs and how you can become familiar with that and have a reference library for yourself of things that you might start to use with people based on what's going on in their health, based on their cooking and eating habits, based on their traditions, based on their tastes, and how much work and effort they're willing to put into that. So we'll go through all of that tonight. So what I want to review is that this was from Shine. This is a post-conference after Shine, which was our Food as Medicine and Holistic Healthcare, your recipe for a fulfilling and thriving practice. And what we shared at Shine was, in addition to the foods and the herbs and the nutrients that go into helping people to heal, also how do you create a fulfilling and thriving practice by getting great results with people and putting some authentic marketing strategies in place. And one of our bonuses we'll talk about in a bit is something that's going to help you dramatically with that piece of it, the authentic marketing. And, you know, as we discussed during Shine, we discuss almost every time I get together with any of you, is we are tired of the management of disease that is rampant in what we call in our society a healthcare system. It's not a healthcare system. It's a disease management system, which consists of putting band-aids on and throwing darts in the dark, trying to figure out what protocols to apply. And what we are here for, why we've left, some of us left our multi-six-figure jobs to take on health coaching, some of us who are still in transition, and some who are thinking about it, and some who are just passionate about this aspect of health. We always keep that in mind, as we want a different paradigm, right? We don't want people to just think that this is the only thing available to them. We want them to be available to do more. And so this disease management system is like, let's pull the battery out of the smoke detector in the middle of the night, because it's waking the baby, waking the dog, waking you. Take the battery out and let the house burn down. So, I missed a slide. Okay. One of my slides got removed. Isn't that interesting? Ha, ha, ha. Well, the next slide after this is supposed to be a house burning down. It was in there this morning, I swear. Anyway, we are trying to get away from the this for that mentality. Here's a drug. Here's a procedure. Here's a pill. And even sometimes in functional medicine, people fall trapped to that because they've grown up, so to speak, in the conventional medicine approach, that we say, okay, what herb do we take for hot flashes? What supplement is good for thyroid imbalance? Somebody asked me that question the other day. What are good herbs for thyroid? Well, it's more than just herbs. So I can tell you there are certain herbs that could support thyroid health. But if we're not looking at it from a holistic functioning perspective, from why is the thyroid not working properly, we're going to get into trouble. And we're back to the this for that mentality. Granted, some of the tools we might be using are safer, less side effects than the tools that Western medicine uses, but it's still a this for that, which overlooks looking at the root cause, which runs the risk of allowing the house to burn down. So we're here because we want to be embracing true healthcare. And when we look at herbs tonight, I'm going to give you a lot of information about how these herbs work and particular actions they may have on the body. But they're part of a whole health picture. They're part of a protocol, a strategy, a lifestyle overhaul that you're offering to your patients and to your clients, not instead of, right? Oh, what herb can I take? Because I don't want to change my diet. No, I don't want to sleep more. What can I do to give me energy during the day? And our job is to educate people on how to move away from that mentality. There's the house burning down. Because when we don't, we end up with the house burning down. So, as I said before, our mission is truly possible for a new paradigm of healthcare. I've seen the shift over the last 25 to 30 years, actually a little over 30 years since I embraced this way of life, 25 years, maybe more, going on 26 years in my clinical practice. And I know it's possible. It's just slower than we all want, right? It just doesn't take like overnight, but we're educating people. The internet has educated people, and people are demanding more. People are going into their doctors and say, what's this MTHFR stuff? Can you test me for it? I heard about adrenal fatigue. Can you test me for it? I heard that just testing TSH is not good enough to test my thyroid. I haven't been getting well over the last 15 years. Can you test these other things that I learned about? People are starting to demand it. And the more we educate those people to demand it, the more they demand it, the more that the powers that be that run the healthcare system are going to have to take action. And so we can do it, because it's a mission that the only way for it to really take hold is for us to share it. It's not your mission. It's not my mission. It's a combined our mission. And the more we look at it that way, the more we can educate people, get them inspired, get them fired up to ask for what they truly need and truly deserve. That's how it's going to change. So let's look at what's going on in our post-Shine conference trainings and for the VIP members. And then I'm going to turn it over to Lynn at the start to be able to share with you some of the things that she's learned over the years on, you know, how to help people with food and herbs on a budget, which you're going to hear a lot about. Like, I can't afford all those things. Well, Lynn's going to talk about what kind of things you can find in the wild and how you can educate your people about that. So that's today, November 21st. We're going to do herbs for health and healing. This is a very information-packed presentation, and we're also going to be inspiring you and keeping you fascinated and interested as we go along. We are really thrilled that we got two of the giants in cardiovascular health, two holistic cardiovascular doctors, cardiologists, MDs, Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn and Dr. Joel Kahn. And I had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn at the airport 2 days after Shine as I was leaving town. We got into a conversation and I had my assistant reach out and he said, yeah, he'd be on it. I said, would you be willing to do that? He said, sure. And we got him. Joel Kahn, I met multiple years ago, probably 2 or 3 years ago at a functional medicine type conference, and we became good buddies, and I've been talking to him about coming on for a while. So we're going to get the two of them on sharing about cardiovascular health and how to use food as medicine to heal cardiovascular health. These are both doctors who have done surgery, who have been trained in the conventional way that cardiologists are trained, doing their residencies, etc. Then on December 5th, another week later, we're going to open up the portal on the classes that we have. It's an online training. I calculated the other day, it's about 5 or 6 hours long, all told. It's all broken up into little segments of particular aspects of what does it take to create classes that you can put, yeah, online, but you can also do this if you don't want to do online classes right away, do it in your community. We give you all the ins and the outs of how to do it, how to pick your topics, how to market it, how to actually do the behind the scenes on broadcasting it over the internet. And that's going to be opening up on December 5th. We'll give you access to it. You'll log in, same way you log in to see any of the other Shine materials, or if you're in our other programs, same way there, but you'll just have a new program to take a look through. Great timing, because then you have all the time. Hopefully you get to take a little time off over the holidays. Maybe you can stick your earphone in or have it on your iPad or iPhone or whatever you use while you're making holiday dinners, while you're wrapping presents. So we're going to give you the opportunity to do that. Then on December 12th is our long-awaited, very much in demand, nutrigenomics and methylation advanced strategies that I'm going to go through. And we're going to go through some of the, how do you look at nutrigenomics? How do you use it to help people pre-create a protocol? It's not a this for that approach. It's not, oh, you have this gene, therefore you need this supplement, as a lot of people, a lot of practitioners make it out to be, and they create like these programs and you run your genetics through and it comes out with a 12-page program of all the supplements you need to take. That's not valuable. It can be valuable to an extent, but what we really want to look at is what are the things you have to be most careful about, because you have genetic pathways that might be altered that can't detox them. What are some of the nutrients in foods you need to accumulate more of or be careful about because of your genetics? I want to teach you what I've learned over the last 10 years that I've been doing it. I was doing this stuff long before anybody ever heard of MTHFR. And I did a webinar on that, I think like 8 years ago, that like opened up the doors for people, the floodgates, and people loved it. And I've been studying it ever since. And I would say my knowledge level here is intermediate level, because it's such a new field. It's an emerging field, and there's so much to learn that even as much as I know at this point, it's still middle of the road, and I'm constantly learning, and I want you to be opening up your mind so you have the lingo, the language, and you know what to be looking for. So that's it. I'm really excited about this training series, and I'm really excited that we get to be together for these 4 weeks, or the next, I guess it's 3 weeks all told. And I'm going to turn this over to Lynn, my dear. Lynn, it's your turn. So let's get your mic unmuted, and let me unmute you. I think I have to unmute you because I put it so that nobody can unmute themselves. And turn on unmute. There we go. Turn on your camera and take control of my screen. I'm going to stop my share.
Okay. I was going to say.
And you get to share the screen.
And I will share my screen. Alrighty. Okay. Does that look right?
Yeah. So let me just give everybody who know, most of you know Lynn. You met her briefly on stage at Shine. She was one of our panel participants in sharing her particular case. Lynn came, I first met Lynn probably 4 years ago, almost 4 years ago. And she had called up because she wanted to come to Shine. It was our very first Shine. And she was, you know, talking about it, and she was arranging it. She asked, you know, can I do a payment plan? I'm going to, you know, whatever it was that was the conversation. And we said, sure, no problem. And then something came up in her life and she couldn't make it. Well, what she did was after that, she contacted us and she found out about a nutritional endocrinology program. I really want to get in it. How can we work this out? Anyway, long story short, we recognized, my whole team recognized right away her incredible knowledge base and desire to help, right? Her mama bear energy that all of you have felt. And, but within what, a couple of months, we hired her full time. And so she's been in our nutritional endocrinology program since the start. She was at our very first retreat. But very quickly, she like ran faster than anybody in the program and ended up coaching people in our ERC program within the first year of her starting in the program. And she just really, really showed that she cares. That's the thing. She has so much passion and so much love. And all of you have felt that energy if you've ever talked to her on the phone. So, and she's brilliant. So she's really, really smart. She knows how to research. She learns stuff. She's right on the draw on any of our calls where she's sharing an amazing amount of information, and she's a resource. So without further ado, Lynn, take it away.
Well, thank you so much. That I feel like saying, where is this person? I am honored and humbled by your introduction there. And it's only equaled by, it's because of everything that you have brought to my life that I've been having this opportunity. So Mutual Admiration Society, thank you. For those of you who are at Spring into Vitality, you may recognize this, and hopefully it will continue to add to the things, or maybe pique your memory of some of the things we talked about there. So this is Foraging for Wild Plants. You know, the weather right now is a little cold, so I'm not doing that. Let's see here. There we go. And as Dr. Rita Marie said, one of the benefits, and this is how I discovered them, they're free. I had all these children and I had a small budget, and that's what started. I was aware of them. And one day I was looking out my window trying to figure out how I was going to stretch nothing. And I looked at my neighbors and they had crab apples. And they had some acorns on the ground, and I was just like, wow, wait, it's all right there. And that's, you know, I became known as that crazy lady with dragging your kids behind all around the block, picking up walnuts and acorns and just, you know, and digging up everything that we could. And then I became just fascinated with it. Their nutrition content is really high for this very reason, because they're fresh. They're in the season that they're going to be there. So let's see, I'm trying to figure out how I can move this so people can actually see the slide. Let's see. There we go. And because of this,
let me just stop you for a second. See where it says slideshow at the top? Click slideshow and then from beginning, and then you'll have it'll take up the whole screen rather than showing your PowerPoint.
Oh, see, always learning new things from beginning. Yeah. Ta-da. Oh.
There you go. Nice.
Now, how do I move it?
Then at the bottom of it, it should have an arrow. There should be an arrow at the bottom of the screen that just will allow you to move it forward.
Let's see. Do not see a bottom arrow.
Okay, I'm just gonna look at mine. It's over. You see the thing, and then there's a white bar at the bottom that has a forward arrow and a backward arrow.
I do not.
You don't see that?
I don't.
You're down below. You're still on the. There you go.
Well, maybe it's just my old and slow computer. All right, I got it. All right. And so because we're picking them fresh, the taste that you're going to get from them is much more complex is the way I would consider it. You need to actually taste these foods. It's not like you're just swallowing them and digesting them. There you go. They fill your mouth up with taste and texture, and they help you to pay attention to what you're eating. And so they'll also stimulate your digestive juices so that you can assimilate and break down your food more easily. This is a really great reason to get out, even if you're just going to look at them. It's connecting you to nature. We have become so disconnected from the outside, from nature, that grounding. You know, personally, I feel there's a reason they call it Mother Nature. It's there to nurture us. So getting out there, putting your feet out there, hugging a tree, whatever you need to do, just be there. Those plants, you know, we've become a real human-centric community of people throughout the world because we think everything revolves around us, and we sometimes fail to see that we have this relationship with the outside, and they're actually there. They know before we do what we need, and we just need to pay attention. And so then this will allow you to slow down, and it will bring you health within your body, your mind, and your spirit. We're just such a busy, busy people. For some reason, we think the busier and the faster we go, the better we are. When really we just need to slow down and open our eyes, much like I did when I was looking out my kitchen window and discovered all of this.
I just want to say that's so beautifully said, and that's something that you can share with your clients on an ongoing basis, is getting them to do a simple thing, like get outside and touch the earth, get outside and just look at the plants, even if they don't know what they are and they just pick them and have them in their hands. The energy of those plants are going to give them energy and distract them away from all the technology and the electromagnetics and the crazy wars and craziness that goes on in the world. And if you know nothing about how to help your clients get well, other than to just get them outside each day to get some fresh air and touch nature, it's right. Huge.
It is huge. And it also gets you outside to get some vitamin D, because even though you don't see the sun, it's there. So yeah, that getting outside is, it's one of those simple and free things that they can do. You do want to be careful. There are what they're called lookalikes. This is why I'm really a bit passionate about, if you're going to start on this, you may want to take a class. You may want to find people locally that have a club or some type of organization where you can do these ventures together, or just find somebody knowledgeable in your area to really start discovering these things, because there are a small percentage of plants that are poisonous and can be deadly. And then I referenced a field guide that can be of help to you. Peterson's Field Guide to Venomous Animals and Poisonous Plants, and it's by Roger Karras and Stephen Foster, which is why it's interesting that it's called Peterson's.
No, interestingly enough, because there's such a small number that are poisonous, one very wise herbalist that I was learning from said, you know what, don't spend all your time learning about all these edible things. Learn, like, you just learn it to the core, all the poisonous stuff in your area.
Exactly.
Small stuff, and then learn what their lookalikes are. And when you do that, then it doesn't matter if you pick something and you're not sure what it is and what it can do. You can always identify it, but you will be able to identify the poisonous stuff. And I thought that was very wise advice.
I completely agree. And so this is why it's good to learn how to identify these wild edibles. You can get books. You can take classes on plant identification. There's a ton of YouTube videos that can be helpful with that. There are many plants that are lookalikes. That doesn't always mean the you know, you may be searching for one thing and you pick another, doesn't necessarily mean the other one is poisonous. It's just you're not getting what you wanted. It's kind of like if you go to the store and you think you're buying whole tomatoes and you're actually getting chopped tomatoes. It's just not what you were hoping to get. You want to know which parts are actually edible. On many plants, all of them from the flower to the root are edible, but some of them, it might only be the root or maybe just the leaves. And then there's various stages of growth. So some plants may be more edible in the spring with the young leaves and not so much in the fall after they've flowered. Have a study area to collect your findings to journal for all the different seasons. I homeschooled my kids and we had a nature table. And so at least once a week we'd go outside and we'd pick things or they had a sketch pad and they'd draw pictures. We'd do things in the fall like putting the leaves between the wax paper and putting that up on the wall. Just whatever you want to do. I mean, this will help you nurture your inner child. Have an area that you can look at that reminds you about nature and all it has there for you. And then this is just one of hundreds of books. It's Newcomb's Wildflower Guide by Lawrence Newcomb. I'm pressing the arrow. Now my fear is I've pressed the arrow three times, and when it actually goes, it's going to go three times forward. Come on.
That happens. Try hitting the back arrow and then hitting it forward.
That's again. That's a good idea. Oh, no, it's not going anywhere.
Your cursor is right in the middle of the screen. Try moving it down. All the way to the bottom. Sometimes even hitting the forward arrow on your cursor part of your screen can help too.
Well, that's what I'm doing. I'm hitting the arrows that are on my keyboard.
Oh.
Because I don't see anything any other way to move it.
Interesting.
All right. Oh, wait.
There you go.
That's it. All right. So harvesting wild edible plants. Always, always be respectful and appreciative. As really go out when you're going to do this and ask them, is it okay if I harvest you? Do I need you? You hear Dr. Henry talking about the sway test. Do the same thing with the plants. As I said in the beginning, these plants are there for us. And so show them that respect just by asking. Collect at most 5% of the plant. You don't want to collect all of it. It leaves more for it to grow back. Leaves in the spring and summer, roots in late fall and winter, the fruits or the flowers or the berries in late summer and fall, and then the seeds in late summer and fall after they've done flowering. So what do you do after you pick things? You want to rinse them off or soak them in cool water, and then you're going to dry them. You've probably seen people hang them up upside down so that the top of the flower or the plant is hanging down. You can hang it down that way. You can lay them. You can lay them like I've taken old window screens and just laying them down on that. You can bundle them in bunches as you do that, put them in paper bags and your dehydrator. And you can freeze. I really only freeze the berries. All right, so let's get on with this. Our first one is dandelions. I picked that first because most people are familiar with dandelions. And dandelions, you may have, if you've ever done a liver cleanse, you will find that dandelions are used by in that. It's a natural diuretic. So they cleanse and detoxify the liver by helping to flush out toxins out of the body. So you can see their vitamins A, B, C, and D. They also have iron, potassium, and zinc, as well as beta carotene. And because it's a diuretic, you would think that it would reduce the amount of potassium that you have in your body, but because they are so high in potassium, they help to replace it, even though you're losing some through urination. It's good for your stomach because it will stimulate the flow of bile, and so it's going to help your liver and as well as your kidneys. It will also, because of this, stimulate your appetite, and then it can also ease some of that stomach pain because it helps you to eliminate, and so it relieves some of that feeling of fullness as well as constipation. And studies have shown that the dandelion root may improve and aid natural bacteria in the GI tract. So that again will help with stomach problems. The best time to harvest dandelions is in the early spring before the plants get too large. That's more for the leaves. The root, I've been digging up the root now. I like to use the flower as well, with like a honey butter. You can use it if you drink wine. You can use it that way as well. It's also good if you have blood sugar issues. There's some early studies that have shown that dandelions may improve blood sugar balancing, including normalizing your blood sugar levels. And it can improve your cholesterol and reduce the clumping of platelets in your blood. It's also really good for skin because it is that blood purifier. And so if you have acne, even older people can have acne, or you have things like psoriasis or eczema, or again, any skin issues, it will help you to have that clear skin. But the best way to do that, to start out with, besides eating it, is to extract a juice from the roots, and that can be applied topically. And it's also good if you do that if you have any open wounds, if you have warts, any skin issues like that. All right, let's move on. Lamb's quarters. I live in a very rural area, and all I heard when I first moved in this area was how the farmers kill lamb's quarters. It was just this terrible, evil weed. It is not. It's exceptionally nutritious. One of the things that's really important to know about lamb's quarter is that, so like our bodies can produce 14 of the essential amino acids, but we need to get 8 of them externally. And lamb's quarter is one of these sources. If you ever have seen lamb's quarter, you'll see that it has kind of a whitish dust on the leaf. That is the mineral salts from the soil. And so if you see that, that indicates that they're very rich in the minerals. And for this reason, they'll often taste salty. And so it can also be considered a salt replacement. Or if you want to, instead of putting in salt, you can put in lamb's quarter and give it that seasoning. So for that matter, you can dry them. I know I have done that in the past. I've dried them and then crumbled them up in my coffee grinder to make it like a seasoning. Let's see. So 3.5 ounces of raw lamb's quarter, which is about a cup of greens, has 73% vitamin A and 96% vitamin C of your recommended daily allowance. It's also a great source of your vitamin Bs, and including thiamine, riboflavin, and niacin. So because it's considered wild spinach, you can use it like spinach. There are many different species of lamb's quarters, but they have some differences, they all are edible. And so you can juice them, put them in your salads, any recipe that calls for greens. They're best when they're eaten younger, because when the leaves get older and mature, it can change the taste because they have oxalic acid. And so you can get this flavor or this taste in your mouth because of the oxalic acid. It's kind of an astringent, kind of a burning sensation. At least that's how I get it in the back of my throat. So if you're going to include lamb's quarters in your meals and you know you have this oxalic acid sensitivity, just be careful with it, because the last thing you want to do, and this is good to know for your clients, is have one of them down a juice that's full of lamb's quarter and then find out that they have an oxalic problem. You want to harvest the seeds in the fall. The seeds are, again, this is such an amazing plant. The seeds are very highly nutritious food. I would consider it a staple, because you can grind them into like a cereal or like a flour for a bread. It's very similar in this respect to quinoa. And so they can also be sprouted. It takes about 1 to 2 days. And then you can add the sprouts to any of your meals. And then you can also grow them even further into microgreens. So, and they start out, they look real small, kind of frail, but they turn into this real powerhouse. So lamb's quarter seeds are edible. Some are easier to use in your food than others. The wild versions, because you can actually buy lamb's quarter seeds and plant them, but mine are all wild. People just seem to think I'm lazy. I actually purposely let all these things grow wild. Anyway, so you just want to be careful as you separate the chaff, because it can, that's why the soaking is really going to be helpful for that. It separates the outer layer from the seed. And so that's, again, why you want to soak them. One thing that's important, or it's something you can tell your clients, is that wild grains are more potent than domesticated grains. And so you only need a small amount, because they're so nutritious and dense. You just need a small amount, to do that. Sprouting the seeds is probably the best and natural way to let the outer layer fall off. If you have any type of food storage, lamb's quarter seeds are a great thing to add to that. And so just for the medicinal use of lamb's quarters, and I know I'm spending more time on this particular one, but it's just one of those undervalued things. We don't talk too much about them. Anyway, when the leaves are chewed into kind of a green paste, kind of like a poultice, and applied to the body, it's really good for insect bites. If you have any scrapes or burns, any type of inflammation, sunburn, the leaves are really good for that. If you have arthritic joints, they can be helpful for that. You can just chew on them and make a paste, or
you can break them down like in the blender or food processor. They support the decrease of pain because they reduce inflammation. So they're very anti-inflammatory. They also bring about an increase in circulation. A tea of the leaves is good for diarrhea, any internal inflammation you might have, stomach aches, if you have a loss of appetite. And like I said, a tea can also, so you have a wash then rather than a poultice. So a tea can be used as a wash for skin irritations, anything that's happening externally. And then you can also put that into your bath water, this tea, and that again helps with your skin. It tightens and tones it. If you are anemic, this adding the leaves to your salads or eating them is really good for those blood conditions because they're so rich in iron. So then they help to increase your blood cell count and just your overall circulatory system. They're also very high, both the leaves and the seeds, very high in protein and phenolic content. So again, that speaks to the antioxidant capacity. The roots have saponin in them, and so you can use them to make soap. And let's see, so they're cleansing, they're laxative, the roots. You can actually make a tea out of it for that reason. So if you have some constipation, you can use the lamb's quarter roots for that. In fact, they're just good for getting rid of any excesses in your body. When you have the young greens in the spring, they can be juiced for their calcium and their vitamin A, C, and B. They've got enzymes, chlorophyll, all sorts of trace minerals. And again, it's just very detoxifying. And again, just using the young leaves for that. The older they get, the little more bitter they get. All right. Burdock root. Again, farmers, for some reason, like to kill this. And I just, breaks my heart. What's really interesting is burdock root is thought so highly of in countries all over the world except for us. And the thing with burdock root is you can see with this picture, sometimes it's confused with cockleburrs or even rhubarb. I know when I first saw one, I thought it was rhubarb and was pleasantly surprised to find out what it was. They are part of that artichoke family. They get to be really big. They can get to be anywhere from 25 to 30 inches, the leaves. So they get to be really big. Their stems are hollow. And they can, the stems themselves can get to be about a yard in length. It flowers from June to October. And then the little flowers, they turn green and into these silver buds. And then they can get purple, which you can see in that picture there. And then after they bloom and flower, the seeds, again, you can see in the picture there, are enclosed inside the burr. And they have these sharp hooks on them. And so then after the flowers leave, then the plant dies. In Asia, they actually use it in macrobiotic cooking, and they use the roots, the flowers, the stems, the whole thing. And they have been known to use the very young leaves, and I personally find them, for myself, intolerable. The root itself, it's just very thin, but it's very long. If you've ever tried to dig them out, you will know that you feel like you are digging to China because they're so long. But they're very crisp and their taste is very mild. I like to slice them, kind of roll cut them, and then I soak them. And because that they do get to be a bit bitter, and then I might like stir fry them. There is a condiment made with them, so it's almost like a pickle. The fiber, it's very fibrous, so it's good for your digestion. They have a drink in the UK that they combine with dandelion, and they use it kind of like a soft drink. So as far as the medicinal uses, when you're talking to your clients, they use it. It's a dietary aid. And so it can help with things like sore throats, colds. It's a blood purifier. If you have dandruff or hair loss, it can be helpful with that, because what it does is it increases the flow of blood, or as a diuretic, it increases the flow of urine. And so it's just a real mild tonic that can be used as a tea. You will find, at least I find, that it makes me sweat. So I like it for that reason. Again, it's just doing things to remove toxins from your body. They use it in China for skin disorders. And like I said, cleansing of the blood, impotence or infertility. In Russia and India, they've also used it for certain types of cancer. They've also used it as a wash to treat burns, because it can reduce pain and just help promote healing in that area. I know we're all familiar with, I'm going to start this story kind of backwards. In the early 1940s, there was a man, he's a Swiss inventor, his name's Georges de Mestral. He was hiking with his dog, and he came back, and his dog was full of these burrs, and he had burrs all over his clothing. And so he started studying the interaction between the hooks on these burrs and his clothes. And that became Velcro. And so it's really interesting. I thought that was really interesting. The other thing to remember for your clients is that there's this kind of fuzz. It's kind of a down like hair underneath the leaves. So if you are allergic to ragweeds or marigold, you want to be careful of burdock, especially with the leaves. Both Shakespeare and Tolstoy actually often wrote about burdock root. And so they actually cautioned in there, if you are nursing or pregnant or thinking of being pregnant, you want to be careful with burdock root. And, you know, it does resemble rhubarb, which is a nightshade. So you want to be careful in terms of making sure you know the difference of them. All right, let's see. Stinging nettle. This has just had, you know, I tell people I eat nettles and they just get, what? You know, they think of it as this pest. But it's an important source of food, fiber. There's some pharmaceuticals that have been used with it. There's many different varieties of nettles. There's actually about 500 species worldwide. And the one that's most common, though, is the stinging nettle. You'll see it everywhere because it spreads both from its roots as well as the seeds that come from its own little burr. They can get to be about 7 feet high, and I can attest to that because I've seen that. And many of you have probably seen it when it's gotten older and has the little burrs on it. If you see nettles though, yeah, that's a really good sign of your soil because they like moist ground and soil that is rich in nutrients. So seeing them is good. The other thing that's interesting about nettles is before flax was introduced, they used the fiber from the stems of nettles to make linen. In fact, in Scotland, it was used into the 17th century, and it was considered one of the most durable fabrics. In World War I, their cotton was actually made from nettle fiber. It's good for bleeding. It's been known to stop both internal and external bleeding, so it's a good blood purifier. If you use it as a tea, it helps with mucus congestion, skin irritations, water retention, diarrhea. If you are nursing or if you have a client that's nursing, it will help with that increase of milk. It stimulates the digestive glands and it helps with the stomach, intestines, the liver, pancreas and gallbladder. If you use it externally, it will help again with rheumatism, both in people and in animals. And it's also really good as a gargle. So if you feel like you're getting a sore throat or if you have any throat infections, gargle with some nettle tea. And again, because it's that blood purifier, it's good for acne and eczema and any of those skin conditions. Now, you know, people talk about picking the nettles and getting stung. Actually, nettle juice from the plant will help with that, any type of rash you get from it. If you take a handful of the young nettle leaves, emphasis on young, and you simmer them for about 2 hours in a quart of water and then strain it and bottle it, this is a really good scalp conditioner, and it makes your hair really soft and kind of glossy. You'll often see in certain conditioners and shampoos that they have nettle in there. Nettles contain tannic acid, lecithin, chlorophyll, iron, silicic acid, lime, potassium, phosphorus, sulfur, sodium, chlorine, and vitamins A and C. But what it's really well known for is you just take the young things and you stir fry them up and eat them. They're really good in soup. Again, in Scotland, they make nettle pudding with leeks and broccoli. So it's just, oh, and then one thing I just found interesting lately, because I was reading up on some of this fermentation, the boiled nettle leaf kind of a tea is, you can use it instead of rennet, so it curdles. So if you're looking at making a cheese or something, you can use your nettle tea with that. When you dry it, it's 40% protein. And so again, really good. It's just a really good source of good food. And the last thing on nettles, this is something I discovered. I had been hanging these nettles from the ceiling, and I found that they repelled flies. So that's something I found. All right, daylilies. What's really nice about daylilies, they're beautiful. Plus, they give you some really good, tasty food. They're easy to harvest, and because of the way you harvest them, you're always going to have more plants. It's just one of those plants that's always going to replenish itself. It's originally from Asia, and it was brought over to North America simply to be an ornamental plant. And because of the seeds and the animals that propagated it, you most often see it along the roadsides, and they love the sun. And so that's why you'll see it there. And I always find them wild. You probably find them frequently wild. They're not to be confused with the lilies that you get in the flower shop. And one way to see that difference is in looking at the leaves. The daylilies, their leaves look like this, like somebody's going to clap. But the lilies in the flower shop are more next to each other horizontally. In early spring, you want to harvest the shoots when they first emerge and are completely tender. And they're going to be less than 8 inches tall. And so you're going to harvest them right at the level of the soil. And so that way they can continue to keep regenerating from the root. You can chop them up and use them in a stir fry. The other thing too with daylilies is that they're more yellow-green. Sometimes people can confuse them with an iris, which is more of a blue-green. And then the other difference between an iris and a daylily is the rhizomes. They look like potatoes with the daylily, and whereas the iris is kind of horizontal, goes like this. And so before the plant goes all the way up, you're going to want to dig up those little fingerling potatoes. And when you dig them up, try not to dig up all of it, or at least leave a little bit of it so that it can grow back again. But you eat them just like potatoes. You don't need to cook them as long as potatoes either. That's another nice thing. And then in the late spring and early summer, they develop their buds. And when you get the buds while they're still green and firm, you can steam them, boil them, stir fry them, and you can also pickle them. And let's see. The one thing you want to caution with daylilies is that they can give some people an upset stomach. So if somebody's going to try it, you know, have them try just one and see how they do. Garlic mustard. I consider garlic mustard kind of a gourmet food. And let's see. You know, it's easy to identify. As you can see, they have those really nice like white flowers. The other thing about garlic mustard, some people call them the bully of the woodlands because they just take over everything. They grow and they grow and they grow. And so some people consider them invasive. However, they have a lot of good medicinal qualities. It's high in vitamins. I was trying to see if I could move this so I could. There you go. It's high in vitamins A and C. It's also high in vitamin E. It has potassium, calcium, magnesium, selenium, copper, iron, and manganese. That's one of the reasons why this is good to include in people's diets, because those are things that are sadly lacking in our daily diet. It is part of the brassica family. And so for that reason, it's a good cancer fighter. So you can consider it up there with things like cauliflower and broccoli, cabbage, and collard greens. It has a slightly bitter, kind of a peppery taste. And it has a very distinctive garlic smell and flavor. There's a book called Nature's Garden by Sam Thayer, and he goes into very great detail about how to harvest it. But all you need to know is that all parts of the plant are edible, but you want, again, get the young leaves before they flower. Otherwise, it's going to be very bitter. As a medicine, it's what they call a vulnerary. In other words, it's good for healing wounds. It's antiseptic, so it's good for things like ulcers or if you have kind of these gangrenous wounds. It's anti-asthmatic. So if you have anybody who has things like asthma or bronchitis, it can be good for that. So you can also crush it and make like a poultice out of it to relieve, like if you have bug bites or itches, things like that. It can also be good for your heart and vascular system because it improves circulation. It does contain some cyanide compounds, but it's water soluble. So, just wash it and steam it, and that should eliminate those compounds. The best thing about it is eating it. It makes an amazing pesto. There's a book called From Pest to Pesto, and so I encourage you to get that and give that a try. And the last one is wood sorrel. It's sometimes called sour grass. And if you've ever eaten it, you would understand why. It's part of the family called oxalis. And oxalis means sour. And as you can imagine, that means it has an oxalic acid content, just like the lamb's quarter or spinach. Now, the thing is that you have to really eat a lot of it in great quantities to get that anti-calcium effect. Obviously, if you or your client has an oxalic problem, you want to avoid it. The other thing is, as it says there, it's rich in vitamin C, and it's antiscorbutic, so that means it was used to treat scurvy, fevers, urinary infections, mouth sores, sore throat, nausea, things like that. There's also something called sheep sorrel, and so it is similar to sheep sorrel. There aren't any poisonous lookalikes for this, but it does look, it's often mistaken for clover, but clover is not poisonous, so you don't have to worry about that. So when you find it, you pick off the leaves, the flowers, and the little seed pods that are there. The tough stems, you don't, when you pick it, you'll have some like wispy type of stems, but if it's tough, you don't really want the tough ones. It's really good when you use it fresh. You can put them in your salads. And then if you make a tea out of it, just put the fresh leaves in and pour the water over it and let it steep. I usually let it steep for about a half an hour. And it's just really good if you have any other cooked or wild greens with it. And it's best harvested mid-spring through the fall. And that is it.
Wow. Thank you, Lynn. That was awesome. Was that awesome, everybody?
I was just sitting here going, oh, there's a lot of questions.
Nope, we got them.
Yeah,
there's a lot of comments.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate it. So we're going to switch gears a little bit, and I'm going to share my screen back again. Let me find it. Here we are. And I hope I can be as exciting as Lynn in sharing this stuff. These aren't the things that you're going to necessarily find in your garden, although some of them, there will be an overlap. But I want to just talk about, what do we do when we want to use herbs for healing benefits? How do we use them? There's a lot of different ways. As Lynn was talking about, there's ways to pick them and then use them in your food. Put them in your salads. Make them into pestos. You can also turn them into teas. You can make tinctures. Tinctures can be glycerin tinctures. They can be made with vinegar. They can be alcohol. And one thing to know about herbs is that different herbs have different constituents in them, some that will extract okay with alcohol, some won't. Some that extract better with water, some don't. Like, for example, milk thistle is a very common and popular herb, but you can't make a tea out of milk thistle. The active constituents just don't extract in water very well, but you can do a high alcohol tincture. I'm not sure about vinegar with that one. So you can do teas, you can do tinctures, you can make them into capsules, you can dry them and then powder them, or you can buy them as powders, you can buy them as extracts, you can make extracts, elixirs, love to put them in, bunch of them into elixirs. You can make steams, like eucalyptus is very commonly used as a steam to open up the bronchioles, and they can be applied topical. So there's a lot of different ways to use them, and when you're familiar with them, it's a really helpful thing to know when you're working with somebody to try to put together a healing plan. So let me do this. I did that over there. There we go. All right. So let's move to, let me set this up, and let's go on. So, oops, now I'm missing my little thing to move them. I think the thing is, Lynn, you have to open it to a certain point because I just lost mine. All right, let me move the, you might have had the thing over it. All right, there we go. All right, so I also like to use them as part of meals. One of the things that I do is what I call the big bowl, where I'll steam up a bunch of vegetables and take some raw vegetables, whatever I have around, and then put them in the blender to make a sauce and take some of them and put them in the bowl and make it the soup or the base. And so I was going to show you, this is what my dinner, it looks kind of not so good now, but it was a big pot of steamed vegetables. I had kale, cabbage, broccoli, and I think that's it tonight, using up what's left. And I steamed them all and I put in some coconut butter and then I put in some curry paste, the Thai curry paste, and some kelp powder for salt. And I blended that up and then I poured it over the rest of the vegetables and it made a really warming and yummy and very, very nutritious soup. So that's one way to do. Then you can incorporate these herbs into salads and salad dressings. You can put them into soups. You can teach people how to, you know, make them with raw sauces and dips. So cooking vegetables takes away some of the nutrition, but then if they take these really highly nutritious herbs, you can blend them up and make, you know, a tahini sauce with some special herbs in it, dips, etc. This afternoon, I had made some yogurt. I made some Brazil nut and macadamia nut yogurt. And instead of just eating it as yogurt, I took some garlic, cayenne, and chipotle and some kelp powder and put it in there and stirred it around. And I had this really yummy dip that I could eat celery sticks and red bell pepper with. I could have poured that over a plate of steamed vegetables. And then I get the probiotics with the herbs, with the great vegetables, and it's just creates a really hearty meal. And it's really fun to teach people how to do this because not everybody's thinking along those lines. You can use, you know, non-gluten grains with raw sauces over them and vegetables, make them into elixirs. So there's a lot of ways to incorporate these things. Some of the things that Lynn's already talked about, and then some of the herbs that I'm going to talk about. And when you understand the activity of certain groups of herbs, then you can pick and choose the ones that you want to encourage people to use. So smoothies, sauces, soups, salad dressing, nut milks, salads themselves and stews, all of these are places where you can incorporate all of these healing herbs and make it fun for people. So it's not just another pill that they're taking or another tincture bottle, that they actually include them in their foods, and people actually love doing that. So going to the culinary herbs, there's a lot of them that have powerful healing properties. We don't have time to go through each and every one of these tonight. I wanted to give you an overview and give you some detailed sheets that you could take away with so you can help to identify therapeutically how you might use these with yourself, your family members, and your clients. But all of these have powerful healing properties. And like this would be a whole, you know, year-long course to go through every single herb. In fact, I did a two-year course where we had, you know, 6 hours a week for 2 years. And I still don't know half of what I would like to know about all the herbs. But garlic, onion, oregano, thyme, those tend to have antiviral. Garlic and onion high in quercetin. So quercetin is a good bioflavonoid that helps with bringing down histamine reactions. So when someone has a cold or a flu, you can actually make this really great Italian soup for them, or teach them how to take garlic and onion and oregano and thyme and rosemary and basil and put it all together with some of the cruciferous vegetables, the green leafy things that are going to give them an amazing amount of nutrition. And they don't need to go for antibiotics and other kinds of drugs for this. They can do it from the power right in their spice rack. Cinnamon, fennel, ginger, cardamom, clove, those tend to be really good to put together in little, like a chai type drinks or sweet drinks or eggnog. I made some recipes in my kitchen show come last weekend where we took those herbs and we put them together and we made an eggnog. We made, a gingerbread cookie. And so those all have really good properties for the gut, for calming the gut, for soothing the gut, for increasing heat. Cumin, very good anti-inflammatory, especially the black cumin. I've been experimenting a lot more with black cumin, which tends to be really amazing for autoimmune conditions, but also for bacterial and viral kind of things. Lemon peel, caraway, those tend to be high in limonene, and limonene is a really good detox chemical. It just actually helps to stimulate the phase 2 liver detox. Cayenne, turmeric, dill is another one with limonene. Cayenne and turmeric, the heat, you know, to help to bring people's heat up when they're cold inside. Mint, same thing, but also good for pain kind of things. And that soothing, like it's a heating and a cooling at the same time. You know, paprika, parsley, sage, tarragon, nutmeg, mustard, all of these have healing properties that you can use and create, help people create dishes that have certain purposes to them. So people tend to think about, oh, I got to eat this green thing, I got to do this. But you say, oh, here's a recipe, and this is a bronchial opening kind of recipe, or this is a soothe the gut kind of recipe. This is immune boosting. You do have to be careful, depending on your state and where you are, about telling people that certain foods or recipes you give them are therapeutic. But you can teach them about it, and you word it in such a way that you don't get yourself into trouble. But I mean, the food is so healing when you put it together this way. So how do you get them? How do you get your clients to get the highest quality herbs? Well, the best is to grow your own, right? You grow your own, or you do what Lynn's suggesting is go out and forage in your neighborhood and take all the wild edibles that your neighbors are just going to throw pesticides on if you don't get to them quick enough. Grow your own. Go to the farmer's market. We have a farmer's market in Austin. There was a woman, and I don't know if she's there. I haven't been to that market in a while, but she would bring all these amazing things from her yard and a lot of wild stuff, the lamb's quarters and purslane and wild spinach and all this. Great source of herbs. Mountain rose herbs, you can get the dried herbs. Frontier herbs, you can get the dried herbs. And there's other places where you can get herbal extracts like Z Natural Foods has a lot of the herbal extracts. So there's a lot of good sources. You want to help them to find organic as much as possible. And so how do we use these, right? There's different groups of herbs that have specific sets of constituents and have specific healing properties. There's digestive tonics, demulcents, carminative herbs, anti-inflammatory, antimicrobial, antispasmodic, sedatives, cholagogues and liver support, immune modulators and stimulatings, healing herbs and nutritive herbs. A lot of the ones Lynn talked about are nutritive in providing certain specific nutrients, but they're also very healing in a lot of ways. This is one of my favorite books I got 20, 25 years ago on herbs is the Herbal Nutritional Herbology. You probably get it on Amazon used for $3. But it's got, for all the herbs, it shows you the sources of vitamin A and C and E and the nutrients, the calcium, etc. So it's a really nice little handbook. You go, oh, it looks like I might be low in vitamin A, or your client shows up as low in some of these nutrients. Instead of constantly having to reach for these pill bottles and give them supplements of this stuff, if they're open to it, why not look up those particular nutrients and find out what herbs and spices they can include into their daily diet for that? One of my favorite books of all times. We gave you this at the event. It's on the, it's in a document that has, I think it's in the elixirs. Yeah, elixirs, hormone balancing elixirs. And it's a chart where I basically broke down some of the herbs into the categories that they may support: adrenal, thyroid, digestion, immune, liver, detox, and bones. It's a guideline. It's not complete. By all means, there's other stuff that might be able to be put in there, but it's certainly a good starting point when you're starting to look at, oh, looks like my thyroid, this person's thyroid might be impacted. They have some low numbers on their lab tests. How can I support them in creating an herbal formula or a tea or ways to put these into their foods? I put a few caveats there with the licorice, a few spots, because licorice can raise their blood pressure. Just be careful if somebody's starting with high blood pressure. I wouldn't do licorice unless you're carefully monitoring and only using tiny amounts. It can even induce high blood pressure in people who start with low blood pressure if you overdo it. I remember when I studied with Dr. Jonathan Wright many, many decades ago, probably 3 decades ago, and he was telling a story about how this guy and got rushed to the emergency room, and it was a guy he was treating for low blood pressure, and his wife took him in, and he had like raging blood pressure, emergency room type, and he said, what's going on? She says, well, he really likes that licorice tea, and he's been drinking like a quart or two a day. Right? So it can raise the blood. So it's, you know, it seems like common sense, like, well, you don't drink 2 quarts a day of this stuff, but if it tastes good and the guy's used to drinking soft drinks or something that they just chug on down, you go, oh, licorice tea, it tastes good. It's sweet. Let me take it. So watch for that. If ever, somebody says, you know, I'm really enjoying this herbal routine, but I'm noticing that my ankles have a little bit of swelling in them. Have them look at the licorice, because that could be one of the first signs of edema, right? Pitting edema as a result of the hypertension from the licorice. So these are just some things just to be careful about. So let's just go through some of the categories. Is this okay? We'll go through some categories and I'll give you lists of the herbs in there. Like I said, I don't have time to go through a detailed treatment of each of these. Lynn did go through at least the dandelion on this. Chicory maybe a little bit. But what are bitters? I think bitters are amazing for stimulating digestion. They will stimulate the production of hydrochloric acid, of pepsin, of the mucus in the upper GI. They can stimulate bile production, pancreatic juices, hormones even in the digestive tract. So they're very good at stimulating. The bitter receptors are under the tongue. So if you have someone take some of these bitter herbs and swish them in their mouth, even if they don't chew them or make a tincture out of them, you can take dandelion, just take the leaves and start chewing on it while they're making their salad. And it's starting to stimulate the juices. They'll start to notice that they salivate more. Awesome stuff. And it's great for stimulating digestion. It also is good for immunity, decongesting the portal vein, calming the nervous system, stimulating the parasympathetic nervous system, which guess what? Everybody needs some parasympathetic stimulation, because we live in a sympathetic world where everything is sympathetic, and helps to lower blood glucose. So be careful if it's somebody who's already has hypoglycemic fits, then be careful about the bitters. But They're awesome, and you can make formulas out of them. I'll have people just juice some of these. I'll have them get a tincture and swish it in their mouth 15 minutes before eating. And it's an amazing source of nutrition to open it up. You have to be careful. If the person tends to be to run cold or hot, then look up the individual bitters before you recommend them to use the one that's appropriate to their constitution. What's next? Demulcents. What are demulcents? Demulcents are mucilaginous herbs, they're often called. People don't like that word. When you tell them I'm going to drink something that's mucilaginous, they go, ew. But in reality, they are so amazing for soothing and healing the digestive tract, healing and rebuilding that broken mucous membrane. And face it, so many people have that. All your people that have reflux or gastritis or have had an ulcer, they are candidates for these mucilaginous herbs, and they're easy to incorporate, and sometimes they work like so magically. I'll talk about a few to be a little bit more careful about, but they're just so lubricating. Lots of people will say, oh, I tried that slippery herb you told me about, but it didn't work. Well, tell me more. What do you mean by it didn't work? Well, I had reflux and I took it and it didn't get rid of the reflux. Then I have to go back and explain. It's not a drug. It's not going to pull the battery out of the smoke detector. It's going to be healing. And when they've done studies with some of the demulcents, like in particular licorice has been studied a lot with relationship to ulcers and gastritis and reflux. But when they do the studies, people take their proton pump inhibitors versus licorice. They get better relief initially, like more rapid relief. When they take the proton pump inhibitors, that lowers the acid, so it makes them more comfortable. But over time, at about 2 to 4 weeks, they see a crossover where the proton pump inhibitors aren't working as well as the licorice. Why? Because the licorice is going in there and soothing and healing and rebuilding the disrupted mucous membrane. So slippery elm, marshmallow, licorice are the ones that come to mind. But there's others. Plantain, which goes back to the edibles. It grows in so many people's yard if you know how to find it. You just take some of that and, you know, blend it up or make a little pesto out of it. Like pestos are great because they concentrate the herbs and they taste really good. And any of these herbs can be combined together to make a pesto. So some of the ones you may not have heard of, Irish moss. Irish moss, I use it, I get it, and it's dry. It's a sea vegetable, and I soak it. And then it gets really big, and then you blend it up and it makes this gel-like consistency, which you can make puddings and beverages and cheesecake. It holds a cheesecake together. It does all kinds of amazing things. You have to be careful with comfrey. Overdoing comfrey in oral form can be problematic for the liver, but, you know, just watch it. If somebody has some liver issues, or only use small amounts. But comfrey is great at soothing and healing surface type things because it helps to heal the membranes. Marshmallow, slippery elm are easy to make as a gruel. So I have people just soak them, put some water in them, and then you could add marshmallow instead of oatmeal. You know, mix it up with some cinnamon and goji berries and whatever else, a few almonds, slithered almonds, and that's going to help to soothe the lining. Or they could take this stuff therapeutically. I'll have them do slippery elm, boil up some water, pour in a tea bag in the water, make a little tea, take the tea bag out, and then add the slippery elm. That way it tastes good. A lot of people complain that it's just so blah, it doesn't really have a taste and it's kind of slimy. But when you make it taste good with their favorite tea bag, or you put cinnamon or vanilla in there, it makes a great soothing beverage. I have had people tell me that slippery elm is their new best friend. I have seen slippery elm work like so quickly to help with a temporary problem with gut irritation. I don't have long-term, long-standing reflux or any of that, but whenever I've taken it, it's been because, oh, I overdid the ginger in the ginger tea, and it's like, oh, that was way too much ginger, and I'm like doubled over in pain, and I quickly take the slippery elm, and within 10, 15 minutes, it's completely gone, right? With somebody who has more of a chronic, it may take a little longer, but I've seen it do wonders. And they have to do it frequently. It's not just something they take once a day. It's something that they take before every meal. And if they do have reflux that keeps them awake at night, they do it at bedtime as well. But even some of the simple herbs that we don't think of as demulcents, because when we put water in them, they don't turn slimy. Cinnamon, chamomile, fenugreek are really good that way. Jujube dates, has anybody had jujube dates? They're kind of interesting. Their Chinese medicine uses them all the time. They don't have that sweetness that the dates have, just a slight sweetness. They're actually quite good. If you put some water in them, they swell up and they make a really nice demulcent. Let me just warn you one more time. Licorice, because of the blood pressure raising effects, when we use it in the digestive tract, we often use a form called DGL licorice, deglycerizinated licorice. And the glycyrrhizic acid is what raises the blood pressure. The glycyrrhizic acid is the active ingredient that you're looking for when you're giving someone licorice because of an adrenal problem. So, you know, you have to balance it out. But if somebody's taking a lot of it to help heal a digestive tract, you can get into that zone of taking too much and aggravating them. So I would do the DGL when you're using it for the gut. And if you're using it for the gut and the adrenals, you might want to balance it and have them take, you know, like one or two doses of the licorice without the glycyrrhizic acid removed, and then the rest with it removed, just to make sure, and have them monitor their blood pressure. Okay. So if you have questions, you can put them in the chat and we can go through them. I'll come to a break point in a little bit. Carminative herbs. We think about fennel a lot as a carminative herb, and in a way it's listed as it dispels gas. So if you have gas, right, and you take fennel, it will help you to dissipate that gas, break up the gas. But there are other herbs as well that do that. They reduce gas and bloating. They enhance the digestive secretion. So if the gas is from food rotting in the gut because it's not being broken down that well, then the carminative herbs are going to help and soothe. They help to tone it, you know, tonify the nice movement that the digestive tract is going to have. Reduces the spasm of smooth muscle. So it can be very helpful for people when they have irritable bowel, IBS, and it helps increase the normal peristalsis. So especially good for people with constipation and also people with SIBO, where the movement, the natural migrating motor complex isn't moving things along. So some of the ones, these are common herbs that most people are going to have in their pantry, in their spice rack, and you can help them. You know, if they have this gut, you know, stuff that happens on a regular basis, yeah, as you're working on healing that and restoring the microbiome and the enzymes and getting them to chew more and all that, when they get into this situation, instead of reaching for the Maalox or whatever else they reach for, those over-the-counter drugs that just suppress symptoms, why don't you, you know, give them some ideas for grabbing some of these herbs and making a tea or a little broth? Right? You can have them simmer some veggies with some of these herbs in a broth and take some of that, just the broth, if they have a bout of indigestion. So fennel is the one that's most popular, most well known. Dill, ginger. Ginger is well known for nausea, soothing nausea in the stomach. Caraway, cinnamon, turmeric, clove, cardamom, chamomile, oregano, rosemary, thyme. Now you want to be careful about which ones you mix together. You may not enjoy rosemary and cardamom mixed together. Like one has a sweeter kind of taste and you'd more expect to be using that in a sweet type of chai tea, whereas the oregano, thyme, and rosemary you'd be doing in an Italian broth or a sauce to go over the vegetables. So, you know, learn a little bit about them, experiment with them, and, you know, cinnamon, clove, and oregano may be a little bit weird and they'll think you're a little odd for recommending that. The other category we have is anti-inflammatory herbs. Those are the ones that help reduce the inflammation. You know, in addition to omega-3 fats must be in balance for people to be able to keep their inflammation under control. So that's an important piece to look at. But some of these herbs can be combined together and help with that. Ginger and turmeric are the most popular for inflammation. We see that a lot, you know, ginger tea, turmeric capsules, there's extracts of turmeric. Licorice tends to be anti-inflammatory, especially for the mucous membranes of the lungs and the bronchioles. There are naturopaths who actually put licorice into neti pots, but what's the other pot called? The nebulizer, right? And then have people put that right up into their lungs because it soothes the inflammation. You can put licorice in a a neti pot, and you can have a person do nasal irrigation if they tend to have sinuses that are inflamed. And here's the thing. A lot of times when people have sinus issues, we think it's all their sinuses are congested. But in reality, sometimes it's just that the membranes are boggy and they're inflamed. And licorice tends to be a good thing in the neti pot for helping with that. I mean, purslane is a wonderful wild edible high in omega-3 fats. It's one of the few plant sources of preformed EPA. Cinnamon, rosemary, basil, cardamom, capsaicin. We think about capsaicin, which is actually the active ingredient in hot pepper, cayenne, as like, oh my God, how could that be anti-inflammatory? It is, if you can get past the burning, that if you feel, it can be so anti-inflammatory. A lot of eye drops are using capsaicin in it. We use it a lot for diabetic neuropathies. There's creams containing capsaicin, and that can help to bring that down. So some of the others are just, you know, some of the stuff over the counter, chives, cilantro, cloves, garlic, parsley. I want to mention Boswellia, also known as frankincense, has a lot of research related to Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. So inflammatory bowel disease responds really well to Boswellia. Okay. So really just learning these, just learn one or two or three that you have around, play around with it, and learn to make little concoctions you can recommend to people. And you always want to ask them, what do you like? What do you not like? Oh, I can't stand the taste of garlic. Okay, so pick another one, right? There's so many to choose from. You just want to find the one that they're going to be compliant with. Sounds like there's an alarm going off. Are you guys hearing that? Okay, good. So antispasmodics. There's a lot of antispasmodics, and I separated out antispasmodics with sedatives because the antispasmodics tend to have more of a calming effect on the muscles. So chamomile, wild yam, you don't want to do that long term because there are some studies that show it might affect the kidneys. Valerian root, which can be very sedative. It's also sedative and antispasmodic. Kudzu, simple thing that's used in macrobiotic cooking all the time to thicken things, to thicken sauces. It's a very common macrobiotic type approach to spasm and inflammation as well, and peppermint. So these can be also peppermint and other mints like wintergreen. You can use them as a salve or an essential oil to be putting over areas that are in spasm. And then antimicrobials, get rid of those buggers, right? So we want to be careful with antimicrobial herbs because we also want to look at the terrain, right? It's not the bug, it's the terrain. So yes, it's a nice alternative, except in like life-threatening situations where they don't work quickly enough, to antibiotics. And they work really well. You just don't want to overuse them. And there is some evidence that some of these might also disrupt the good microbiome and kill some of the sensitive organisms that we want to keep around. So we don't overuse these, but incorporating these into food. And then when we discover that there may be a overgrowth of bacteria in the gut or some candida or some parasites, that we create a little blend of these and always rotate them. That's a trick with antimicrobials. You don't want to be taking golden seal every day for a year. You don't want to be taking oregano every day for a year. The reason is that these bugs are smart and they mutate and they become resistant to the things that they used to be sensitive to. I see this all the time whenever we run stool tests. I see a lot of people when they do a sensitivity on their stool test, Their oregano doesn't do anything for them, or berberine, which is from Oregon grape and golden seal, doesn't do anything for them. So just really get into a rotation pattern when you're helping people using antimicrobials for a chronic infectious thing. You know, if they have an Epstein-Barr, they have a chronic overgrowth in their gut or whatever, I would say rotate them. Pick some that are appropriate. Some of these are antiviral more so than antibacterial. Some of them work better on bacteria. Some of them work on all across the board. Some of them are better for parasites. So you want to rotate them at maybe 4 to 5 days and then move to another one. So I usually like to pick 4 or 5 of them and do a 4 or 5 day rotation and then switch to the next one. And it could be 2 or 3 that you do that rotation on. So maybe you have golden seal and oregano, and then the next round you do grapefruit seed extract and thyme. But make sure they're not two that are very similar. Like, for example, golden seal and Oregon grape, one of the active constituents, the most powerful one we know about, is berberine. And the berberine is high in both of them. Golden seal tends to be an endangered plant. So unless you've got some growing wild on your land, I would be careful of that. I only use that when it's a real serious situation and none of the other stuff is working. But Oregon grape is a great source and it's very abundant. Isatis is more of an antiviral. Grapefruit seed extract, there's mixed reviews. A lot of people do show sensitivity to that on the stool test. Some people say that it's not actually the grapefruit seed extract, that it's some other chemicals that they use in processing it. I'm not sure what the exact story is. So I don't overdo grapefruit seed extract. You know, we talk oregano. You can do that as essential oil. You can do it as the actual spice. I have tons of oregano growing in my yard. You can take a big batch of that and throw it in a soup or make a pesto. You'd have to put it, mild it down with something more, less strong. I used to get a little oregano tincture when my kids were little. My son would go like, oh my God, that's so spicy. As he got older, he got to be this, I want to challenge my friends. And he'd say, Mom, you have any more of that oregano stuff? I want to show my friends. And he would literally take the oregano and put it right on his tongue. And it was shocking, but that's what crazy teenagers do. But he didn't get sick very much because he was always taking this oregano. Turmeric, thyme, propolis, fennel, all of these things have antimicrobial effect. Even raw pumpkin seeds. I put some of the foods because these are very concentrated. Raw pumpkin seeds tend to be really good with parasites. Coconut oil, the MCT, the lauric acid tends to be a really strong antiviral. And pomegranate even has some of that. I don't think the pasteurized pomegranate juice. I think we're talking the juice of a real pomegranate. All right, let's talk about cholagogues. We have two more of these, and then I'm going to open up for questions, and then we can share some of the specific herbs. I don't want to put you all to sleep. So cholagogue, what is cholagogue? Well, they stimulate the bile flow. So they actually get the bile flowing. So it stimulates the gallbladder, the contraction of the liver to release the bile into the gallbladder, the contraction of the gallbladder to release the bile, and it keeps it flowing. Stagnant bile is a problem. If people are detoxing in the liver and the liver is like creating this bile where it's dumping all these neutralized toxins, but it doesn't go anywhere, it's not going to do you any good if you don't eliminate those toxins. So it's really good to keep the flow of bile going and can help stimulate fat digestion as well. Helps to strengthen liver and, of course, enhance detoxification because it keeps the toxins moving on out. The bile then goes down, gets eliminated in the intestine. Now we have to make sure that there's no constipation. So drinking lots of water is super important when you have somebody doing the cholagogue herbs. So this is a list of them. Artichoke, barberry, blue fag, bone set. Some of these are not necessarily the ones that they're going to have in their spice rack, right? These are more therapeutic herbs. They're not the nutritive herbs, except artichoke. Although the artichoke is the actual leaf, not the plant itself. It's the actual leaf that's the most stimulating here. So you actually can take the leaves and boil them up in a pot and take that water and use that. Bone set, dandelion we talked about before, fringe tree, gentian, very strong, very bitter. It's also very good as a bitter. And a lot of these herbs you're seeing on multiple lists, right? So they have multiple properties. So when you have someone who has multiple symptoms and imbalances, you can start to learn, well, oh, this herb can help them in both ways. Wild indigos, wild yam, yellow dock. I love yellow dock because not only is it a cholagogue and helps move the bile, it's very rich in minerals and also stimulates the flow of stomach acid. So I'll use that a lot with folks with low iron. It's very concentrated in iron. And I've actually seen people go and double their serum iron in a month or 6 weeks by taking a yellow dock tincture. You can do these as tinctures, which is the most common way of doing a lot of these just because they're strong. Or you can do them as teas or powders that you use in foods. And then liver-supportive culinary herbs. Again, going back to the foods, like everyday detox is what I like to call it. Get some of these herbs into their food supply on a regular basis. The caraway and the turmeric. The caraway and the dill are high in limonene, just like the lemon the peel of the lemon or lemon oil. And that's a really good phase two stimulator of liver detox. The turmeric, basil, cardamom, cayenne, cilantro, cinnamon, dill, fennel, garlic, ginger, onion, peppermint, thyme. And so when you have these charts, which you're welcome to print out, we gave you the slides, and you keep them around, you can play around with some recipes, create recipes, and then share those with your clients. Some of them are going to be like really, you know, culinary geniuses and they will create it, but a lot of them, they don't have that oomph, that initiative. And if you start playing with these and you add to your repertoire, not just delicious recipes, but delicious and functional recipes. I love talking about functional food, right? Make the food do things to help the function in the bod. And then we have immune. So we have immune stimulators and immune modulators. So what's the difference? And it is important to know this. Immune stimulators will increase the activity of the immune system. Immune stimulators are good for acute situations, acute viral infection, acute bacterial infection, something that you want to get a quick boost to the immune system. Garlic, wild indigo, baptisia, very good for sinuses, myrrh, echinacea, bone set is not actually used in general for setting bones. It's actually more used for fevers. Elderberry, amazing antiviral. You can get the little berries from mountain rose herbs and make teas and jams and different things like that. Spilanthes and usnea. Those are all good immune stimulators to get the stuff moving out quickly. The modulators are more to balance the immune system. And if you use them when they're in an acute situation, it might be counterproductive. So astragalus is never given when an immune stimulator is needed because it can drive the infection deeper. Siberian and Panax ginseng, you know, those are great. Cordyceps, reishi, shiitake. I like to take these things on a regular basis just to keep the immune system active and balanced before flu season, before getting on an airplane with a bunch of sneezing kids at Christmas or Thanksgiving, right? Before going to visit the relatives when everybody's coughing and hacking, to keep your immune system balanced in between. Holy basil, and some of these are adaptogens. If you look at the list of adaptogens, they're in that category as well. Rhodiola, schizandra, another berry, which you can get. They have a little bitterness to them. A lot of people find that that helps with ashwagandha for falling asleep. Those are both also considered, adaptogens. All right. We're going to do a couple more global things. Okay. And then we're going to go into, I'll take a break and we can go into the specifics if you want to go there. So these are the top immune supporting herbs that I like to use. Echinacea reduces inflammation, destroys free radicals, increases active white blood cells. So for those of you who come back with your blood cell counts or you find that your clients have low blood, white blood cells, which is often very common in chronic infectious stuff, in chronic immune hyperregulation, like in autoimmune, it helps to increase the active white blood cells and stimulates production of interferon, which is a potent antiviral, which if you wanted to buy interferon and get it, it would be at the like thousands and thousands of dollars per dose. So if we can do things to naturally stimulate interferon production, all the better. Ginseng contains genicides. They're anti-inflammatory, anti-diabetic, and anti-cancer. So it really helps to keep that blood sugar steady. And it's used in cancer. You can't say that to people. So you just need to talk about how it supports the immune system. Ginkgo, it has two particular chemicals and constituents, bilobalides and ginkgolides. That protects against free radical production. Ganoderma is reishi. I love reishi. Have you ever bought a reishi, the dried reishi? They're big, they're beautiful, they're red. And you simmer them in a pot for like 24 hours to 48 hours to actually extract things out of them. Then you have this beautiful base, this broth that you can use for making vegetable soups that they can use for teas, elixirs. So it's an awesome thing. Put it in a jar, keep it in the fridge, and then use it when they're making great other meals. It's a great and easy thing to do. You can also get reishi as an extract. At Shine, we had our elixir table And we had some reishi extract. So it's already been extracted and then powdered. That's the easy way. But for those who like that really earthy, you know, really get into the food, I love getting those big. They're beautiful too. Astragalus, it actually looks like a tongue depressor. So when you get the whole root, it's a like a tongue depressor. And you can have them throw a couple of those in when they're making a soup or a stew. Or you can get it as an extract or a powder and put it in elixirs and smoothies and things like that. And then cat's claw, which enhances the capacity to engulf and destroy pathogens. Isn't that a nice thing to have? So these are some of the top immune supporting herbs. And here's some herbs that have been shown to be helpful in Hashimoto's to help bring down the antibody levels. You know, some of them are actually going to be good for any kind of autoimmune, like the mushrooms and Romania, which is also a really great adaptogen, great for the kidneys and the adrenals. Ashwagandha helps to convert T4 to T3. So people who have those conversion issues, along with Hashimoto's, which they go hand in hand a lot, and along with just low thyroid function, ashwagandha helps to raise the function. The only contraindication to using ashwagandha is that somebody actually has hyperthyroidism. So when they have autoantibodies, sometimes it's a hyper, so you really have to differentiate and make sure you don't make them worse. But it's very powerful. Schizandra increases glutathione. Blue flag actually detoxifies the thyroid, and Eleuthero has been found to support the stress, which leads people to have Hashimoto's. I just thought I'd throw that in there, because those are really powerful, and we see that a lot. I mean, it's just amazing. It's almost like an epidemic of Hashimoto's. And the thing is, 90% of all hypothyroidism is actually autoimmune in nature. So there's more people running around with Hashimoto's than have ever been diagnosed with it. And then another list of the, I went through that one already. I think we had elderberries on there, andrographics, Indian echinacea stimulates the immune system, wild indigo stimulates the immune system, myrrh, boneset, spilanthes, usnea. Usnea is a really good for chronic, like gross respiratory infections, like the sinus infections where there's like a lot of green gunk coming out of the sinuses. Usnea tends to be a really good one for that. Maitake, I love maitake. It's also good for blood sugar, and gynostemma, which increases the white blood cells. So there's some overlap on some of these slides. So before I get into, I'm just going to give you this list of sedatives, then we're going to stop and take a break. And then I have some specifics about very specific herbs and pages. And I'm going to share with you how to use those. So sedatives, like when would you use that? Well, people are having trouble sleeping. People will have the mind racing and they just can't get it to stop. You know, some of these are better than others. They're nervines. They help to calm the nerves. And it's really behooves you to learn a little bit about each of these. And that's why I've given you some sheets, because it's hard to differentiate without really knowing. Oh, just pick one from the list. You have to really match the herb to the person, to their constitution, which takes it away from a this for that. Yeah, these are sedatives, but it's not like, oh yeah, just try NyQuil, right? Just try whatever. It's different. You're really trying to personalize it. And when you understand them and you learn it and you have reference guides, it can be very helpful. So passion flower, I love for calming that mind. When you get into bed and you're laying there going, oh, and I can do this and then that and then this and then that and everything's going, passion flower is great to just stop that racing mind. Lemon balm just kind of soothes and calms everything. And we have that growing in our little herb plot that we just grows wild ever since we planted it 3 or 4 years ago. But it's very calming and soothing. And actually one of our members of ERC last year brought me this huge amount of lemon balm right before I was about to go on vacation. So I knew I couldn't use it fresh. So I dried it in my dehydrator and then I just ground it down and put it in, or I slid it off the stems. And now I have a couple of jars of lemon balm that I can make a tea out of anytime I want to. Chamomile, that's the common, you know, grandma gives you chamomile tea to soothe your upset tummy. So it calms down the nerves as well as the muscles. Milky oat. Some people are concerned about that if they're gluten sensitive. I mean, generally milky oat as an herb doesn't contain it, but you know, you go carefully with somebody who's gluten sensitive. But you see the milk like at the top of these little oats. It's just this little white milky. You have to pick it. You have to harvest it and then make a tincture out of it right at the right time. But that can be amazing for calming the nerves and helping people sleep. lavender, skullcap, wild lettuce, hops, valerian, California poppy, kava kava, magnolia. I'm just pulling out some of them that have specific claim to fame. Magnolia, really good for lowering cortisol levels. It's part of several formulas like Cortisol Manager, which people take at bedtime when they have that high level of cortisol that's causing the lack of sleep. Really, in reality, you're working with somebody with sleep problems. You want to understand why. You don't want to just start throwing herbs at them. You want to find the ones that seem to balance best and help to understand why are they having this issue. Is there pain somewhere in their body that needs to be addressed? Is their cortisol level too high, right? Are their adrenals just kind of, you know, wonky and they're, you know, low during the day and then high at night? Those are all things to be finding out. And those of you in ERC, we're going to go through all of the differentiations. We have a whole module on sleep with, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours worth of videos where we go through and teach, you know, all the different ways to differentiate the sleep problems, the sleep cycles, and what herbs to be taking. So I want to see if there's any questions at this point. I know I've been racing through this, but you'll have the video and you can watch it back. So any questions? Lynn, were there any questions in the chat that I should be aware of? And does anybody have any questions? If you want to raise your hand or just open up your line. Well, raise your hand because I think I've set it so that you can't open your line. I can change that, I think. More. Oh, attendees. Well, I don't know. Yeah, so anybody have questions? Just raise your hand and I'll see it. No? Is this clear? Is this helpful? Is this boring? Are you going to sleep? That's my worst fear, is making people fall asleep. No? Good? Janine said, I've been sick for 2 days and used essential oils and a diffuser and applied just about 30 minutes ago. My sinuses had almost normal. You know, there's so many things you can do. High dose vitamin C, essential oils in a diffuser, essential oils over the sinuses, and looking at some of these herbs that break things down. Quercetin, onions and garlic, if you tolerate those. So it's just, this stuff is powerful stuff. It really is powerful stuff. Let's see. Anything else in here, Lynn? No? No? Okay. So I'll keep going. Yeah? All right. I'm not going to go through each of these in detail. I do that in the sleep module in NEPT, and it takes a long time to go through it. But you have this, and the way we laid this out, Lynn and I worked on this together and created a page for each of these sedative herbs so that it teaches you the actions. Like you can ask people questions, like, is your mind racing, or is it just that your body's restless, or what's the symptoms going on when you can't sleep? It soothes the mind, has some flavonoids, so I tell you about that. It helps increase GABA. The dosage I've given you for each one, like in different kind of conditions, but, you know, sometimes you take tincture, sometimes capsules, sometimes tea. We've given you average doses, but you're going to have to figure that out for each person. And then, of course, contraindications is always important. Okay. Then we put a picture in and then took some references that you can look up if you want to go into more detail. So we've got this for passion flower. We've got it for lemon balm. And a lot of these work well together, and we'll mention that in these charts. We've got one for chamomile, milky oats. Look at that. You see how the oats are on the very tip there, that white stuff? That's why they call it the milky oats. And because they have to be picked at the right time and harvested right at the right time. And so here's some really good references for that and ways that you can do it. You know, like this one is rich in chromium. So this might be a good thing for people with blood sugar imbalances, right? Vitamins B and A and C and some of the herbs. So you can look at these from a nutritional standpoint as well. The lavender is just so beautiful, isn't it? It's just gorgeous. And it's smelling it is very relaxing, as well as taking it inside. So most people actually do lavender topically or in the air as aromatherapy. Skullcap. I've used skullcap quite a number of times. I had somebody create have me create a protocol for her once when she was going to be traveling, and she knew that she was really scared of getting on an airplane. So she wanted some kind of an herbal concoction that she could take when she first got on the airplane so she could relax. And skullcap and California poppy were in there, and I don't remember exactly what else we put in there. I didn't want to put valerian in because I wanted her to be able to wake up after 2 hours and get off the plane and not feel like she was drugged. But skullcap can be very helpful for that as well. It's just relax and soothe the nerves. Wild lettuce. Lynn introduced me to wild lettuce. I haven't used wild lettuce, but she has it growing in her yard and finds that it can be very helpful for that, like, quick, put you down. You don't want to overdo it. You want to be careful with it. And most of these have contraindications in pregnancy and nursing. So always remind people of those. Hops, you know, it's in beer, right? Hops is very effective and very calming. Valerian, you got to be careful with, because it can have that paradoxical effect on a lot of folks, where instead of it calming them down, it revs them up. And it's a small part of the population, but always warn people about that if they've never taken valerian before. And it also can be extremely sedative. Like if you take too much valerian, it may be hard, almost like Valium, to get out of bed the next morning. I remember being prescribed Valium when I was in college and I had bad headaches, and it was like I could not get out of bed in the morning. I literally had to remove my body part by part by part. The head's still hanging there and I'm back to sleep, and the alarm snoozes again, and I said, forget it, I'll take the headaches. And that's when I started really exploring and looking for other alternatives. Found out that I was allergic to eggs and never had a headache like that again. California poppy is so beautiful. I mean, we're reminded of the Wizard of Oz, the scene in the Wizard of Oz where they're going through the poppy fields. And that's not California poppy, but poppy, you know, tends to have some of the benzodiazepine type effects. And, you know, they go through and they all like take a nice nap until the snow comes down and wakes them up. But poppy is very soothing and relaxing. Kava. We had a kava bar. I think it's still in town. It's way south, so I've only been there once. But it actually, you go in there and you sit down and you don't order coffee. They have all kinds of kava drinks. And it tastes kind of weird, and it has a weird effect on the tongue. It kind of, you know, like puckering effect, but very calming and very soothing. A magnolia. Like I said before, I really like magnolia because of its ability to lower the cortisol levels. So people who are revved up at night and can't fall asleep, magnolia is really good. We've done it separate, you know, just magnolia, or magnolia in combination with other things. St. John's wort, we always think about that as an antidepressant. And it is, it's a calming on the nervous system, and it works well with passion flower. So especially if someone tends to have some depressive tendencies and they're having trouble falling asleep, the mind is racing, and it helps to increase the uptake of melatonin, and also increases GABA. Catnip, right? The cat gets into the catnip and then falls asleep under the table, right? It has a synergy with skullcap and fennel and lemon balm and milky oat. And again, you make these different tinctures for it. Okay, so that's it for those. In addition, we have herbs that support the sex hormones. We have maca. Maca can be really good. I've heard of a lot of folks, a lot of men in particular, who are having prostate problems and erectile dysfunction and different issues with sex drive, having great results with maca. It also helps to balance out periods. I think the contraindication to that would be pregnancy, because you don't want to muck with the sex hormones during pregnancy. But even some of these major ones that we eat, cardamom, basil, saw palmetto is a good as an aromatase inhibitor. So it helps to bring up the testosterone levels by bringing down the conversion from testosterone into estrogen. Ashwagandha, good for the thyroid, supports the sex hormones that way. Ginkgo, sarsaparilla, ginseng, black cohosh. Black cohosh works not so, a lot of people think of black cohosh as the hot flash herb. It's not the hot flash herb. It's actually semisifuga is the technical name of it. And it's actually real calming. And it does do some work with the hot flashes and in menopause, but it's also used a lot in injuries. Like if somebody has some, you know, muscle spasms as a result of injury. And Dong Quai, we think about that as a sex hormone herb. It's actually a liver herb. And the reason it helps the sex hormones is that it helps improve the pathways for detoxifying estrogen, right? And it helps people with what we call dry constipation in Chinese medicine, because it moistens the stool by increasing the flow of bile. This is a chart. I just made a copy of it so you know. I gave you this. It's on the page in the digital handout page for Shine, and I also sent the link in the thing we did today, the email that we sent out today. So you have this in a PDF. You can print it out. Highly recommend that you print out this and you print out the slides from here and keep a little notebook that you have a reference guide for so you can look things up, because you're not going to memorize these things. I mean, I know in general what these different herbs are, but if I want the specifics about the dosing and whether it's better as a tincture or whatnot and what other effects they have. So I may know the main effect of ashwagandha, but look at all the other things. So if you have, I have actually give this handout to people in my adrenal program, and I have them, I say, look, here's the stage one, stage two, stage three herbs. And then I want you to pick out, you know, I teach them how to figure out which stage they're in. And then from there, what herbs like resonate with you? I tell them, read this little thing. What resonates? They go, oh my God, ashwagandha. I also have anxiety and insomnia. You know, I have some coughing, whatever. They go through it and whatever resonates with them. And the same thing with you, as you're reading through some of this in response to just doing a patient intake, you can figure out like which one makes the most sense. Like cordyceps, I was just gravitating towards cordyceps. Like I just wanted cordyceps like crazy. And then I found out, oh, it helps increase endurance and stamina. And here I was staying up really late and trying to push my body to the nth degree. I needed that stamina, still do. So gravitate towards that. Oops. Holy basil is just a really nice adaptogen. A lot of these are adaptogens. Reishi, you know, so I've just given you some more information about it and how to use it. Again, licorice root, be careful and not overdoing it with people. Although I tell you, I had somebody who had such burned out adrenals. I mean, she was, you know, below. And she started taking the licorice. I just said, watch for the blood pressure, watch for the ankle swelling. And she ended up taking like three big dropperfuls of licorice extract three times a day, never affected her blood pressure. Like some people get wired. I've had people take three drops of licorice and feel like, you know, wild and agitated. So it's all, everybody's going to be different how they are affected by these things. Shiitake is wonderful, and we made a great shiitake gravy the other day with fresh shiitakes ground up, blended up with Brazil nuts and some spices and garlic and all, shallots, I think it was, instead of garlic. And it was just delicious. So you can easily incorporate shiitake as a food or get a shiitake powder. Cinnamon, easy, right? It's great for blood pressure, blood sugar. So it's easy to get them to incorporate that into their diet. Turmeric, easy to get in. Ginger, I put them in smoothies. Every day my smoothie has that in there. Maca, slippery elm. We talked about these earlier. This is just a little bit more detail about them. And that's it. You know, you have access to all of this. You're not going to become an herbalist overnight, but you have reference material now. You have some ways to, you know, be able to learn this stuff without having to just wildly go into a 450-page herb book and start studying or taking an herbal class. If you have access to some sort of an herbal class, by all means, there are some online ones. I like American Botanical Council is a very nice thing to join. They have all kinds of great newsletters and reference materials. The American Herbalist Guild, MediHerb. There is one. Where's my? Oh, I don't remember which one he is. Paul Bergner. Can't remember which one is his, Herb Mentor maybe, but he has some amazing classes on cassette tape or little CDs, but you can learn a tremendous amount, especially if you drive a lot, you know, you're back and forth and driving. It's a great way to learn some of the herbs as well. Here's some books. My Nutritional Herbology is on there. Medical Herbalism, that's, you know, more recent book. David Winston is who I studied with, and he's got a very pragmatic and practical approach. because he studied in the Eastern tradition, the Cherokee tradition, and the Western, and he knows the spiritual aspects of the herbs and also the biochemistry. And it's really rare to get an herbalist who has both. You have the very pragmatic Western herbalist, and then you have the more earthy kind of herbalists that are into the spiritual nature and what the plants are telling them. He does both, which I really like. So I studied with him in a 2-year program. What else? So there's a book list at Mountain Rose Herbs as well. And then some additional. So there's lots of resources if you want. Some of these have some overlaps, but good stuff. I think that's it. What else? So I wanted to end with putting some of this stuff together. And we finished with this at Shine, using food as medicine to achieve unstoppable health. So really these 12 steps are important. It's not, you know, just jump in and put them on some herbs. Help them with their stress. Help them to connect with the values, visions, and goals, because that's going to keep them connected. Track blood glucose. It's a really important piece to track blood glucose, and no doctors are out there telling them, and you end up with a glucose problem after it's, you know, years down the road, decades down the road, and they've got a lot of peripheral neuropathies and such. Adding foods that support healing before replacing the foods that inhibit. And we gave you some tools at Shine for doing food swaps. But if you start to take away their foods before you give foods, it's really challenging. So we work in stages, support detox and methylation, have fun with nourishing foods, teach them how to have fun in the kitchen, and show them how to make some various and sundry pestos and gravies and sauces that incorporate these healing foods. Identify food sensitivities and do an elimination diet. Super important. And it doesn't mean that you go and have to run like a $500 test for all the antibodies. There's so many ways that you can identify it with an elimination diet. Creating strategies for dealing with resistance. That's when the ugly head of food addiction comes up, the emotional connection. How can you help them and support them in there and let them let go of limiting beliefs, make time for fun, and learn to say no and put boundaries on other people's demands on their time. Because what you're going to find is the people who tend to get sick and tend to seek your help are people who are those really high achievers that always are doing and doing and doing. And really learning to say no is part of your process with them. It's not just about identifying what food and what nutrient and what herb. It's really about supporting the whole person and helping them to realize their full potential and get stuff out of the way that they don't even realize is in their way. So I think it's just really super important. And there are some emotional components that come up that sabotage them on their way. I've given you this. It's a protocol document. It's actually from last year's Shine, but it just helps you to see what do you have to do for everybody to support those base. So often I get the question, oh, so what do I do for somebody who has thyroid problem? Well, I say, find out why they have a thyroid problem. Let's go down to the basics. Which of their pillars are out of balance? Is their digestion a mess? Their blood sugar, their adrenals? Let's fix the underlying roots before we jump in and want to support. Oh, ashwagandha is great. Yeah, and you may be giving them Band-Aid type solutions temporarily. You may be giving them herbs to support particular areas, but you have to be supporting them from the bottom up. It's really super important. And for you, you know, for having this practice, for putting this stuff into practice, there are those three pieces for you to just create that unstoppable practice, that practice of your dreams. I was interviewed earlier this week for a new summit that's coming out. It's Create Your Dream Practice, right? And I talked a lot about this formula there because I think it's so important. And we jump in and we just want to find out what the latest and the greatest new herb is and go to all these clinical stuff, or we want to find out what the latest marketing tool is or what Facebook ads to run. But in reality, we have to look at it as a whole. You look at the person as a holistic entity and you balance them holistically. You've got to balance your practice, your work with people holistically. And it starts with self-nurturing. If you're not nurturing yourself, you're going to burn out and you're not going to be a good example for people. So taking time for self-nurturing, clinical mastery. This presentation we did tonight is part of clinical mastery. I have my 5 steps to clinical mastery. Connect them to their values. Discover what's out of balance? What habits are creating this problem? What nutrients are out of balance? What assessments that you can do, or labs are going to, well, labs would be next, but what assessments can you do with them to figure out, and what questions to ask what's out of balance? Analyze. That's where the labs come in. But a lot of people want to jump right in and say, what labs? People ask me that all the time. What labs should I run? Let's go look to see what labs. I'm a big fan of not running too many labs, at least initially, to try to get some of the balance happening, and then we run the labs. Empower, which is where you give them the tools. You share with them the recipes, the formulas, and the ways that they can incorporate this, and then help them to look at balancing each of the individual systems. And then, of course, your marketing strategies are super, super important. You want to be coming from you. You want to get the latest and the greatest strategy and then not feel like you're being authentic. People resonate with you being you. This is, I gave you this map. Who's been working on this map from Shine? Anybody got their map filled out? Okay, this is really important because it helps you to see where your holes are, where you can focus your attention, and start with the self-nurturing. Which of those, give yourself a score on each of those areas, and then decide, what are you going to do for self-nurturing? What are you going to commit to? 3 to 5 things that you're going to commit to doing on a daily basis, weekly basis, regular basis to help support. Is it meditation? Is it movement? Is it going outdoors and picking wild herbs and with your feet in the ground? Is it running on the lawn with your grandkids? What is it that you're going to do to self-nurture? And then which of these systems, check them off, like which of these systems do you feel are out of balance? Just from your initial look at, this is for you. You can always run the assessments and figure it out, but you're going to have a sense, like, I really feel like my digestion is it. I'm always bloated, or you know what? I had this thyroid issue. I've got this swelling. How do you rate yourself on there? And really take stock so you know where you have to focus your own self-care. And as you learn, you know, the more you're in these seminars that we're doing, and those of you who are in NEPT or in some of our other programs, you're getting like a lot of clinical mastery stuff, and you're going to learn how to take care of yourself better and apply things to yourself and your family members first. And then looking at all these pieces, which ones do you feel like you totally have? You really get it. Which ones do you feel like you need more work with? And give yourself a score. And the same thing on the marketing side. Who do you really want to work with? Not who did somebody else tell you is good to work with. What do you want to be doing? If you really want to be working more on emotional nurturing them or helping them with emotional eating, that's okay, right? Even if you're trained as an herbalist, you can be working with people on that. Go with what your heart is telling you, because that's when you're going to be the most effective. And then surround yourself by others in the community who can help you and fill the gaps where as need be. And then, you know, this is just the details of these. So I encourage you to use this. Who's willing to commit to going through this sheet and filling it out for themselves? Who's in? Lynn is. Who else? Anybody? Really going to help you. Let's see. I'm looking to see if there's any other. Lynn writes, Isatis is used to read the common cold because it's a very strong antiviral. I often use Isatis when I'm working with someone who has, say, one of the like EBV or hepatitis or one of those chronic viral things, and I'll rotate that along with some other antivirals because, like I said, with the antimicrobials, you always want to rotate them. Let's see. Haven't found a pick where it was to connect from gallbladder to pancreas, and then there was one to the liver to intestines. I'm not sure what you mean by that, Janine, because the liver doesn't connect to the pancreas, but they have a duct that comes out. So you have the common bile duct where they meet, the ducts from each of them. Let's see. Somebody, who said we have a sleep formula that has the 6 of those herbs? Yeah, you have that. Yeah, because that makes a lot of sense. Oh, who put these lists? Is that Lynn also? My thing is like not moving, but there's a whole bunch of really great resources. Let's make sure we save this chat. Okay, any other questions, comments? Let me just see. I just had a couple more things. So I just wanted to say that, you know, our nutritional endocrinology program does cover all of that. A bunch of you signed up and are there. If you're not sure if this is for you, we cover all of this. Or you're not sure what your next step is. Maybe this isn't for you, but maybe something else is. Sign up for a strategy session and we'll sit with you and help you to know what, like, where do you need to go? Especially if you fill out some of those pieces on that form, that would be a great segue to sit down with Lynn or Jan or one of our other people who do those enrollment conversations or strategy sessions, actually. They can help you to determine what your next step might be. And it's your time. So make a decision. What do you need to do next? Let's get it together. I believe that endocrinology is the master control center, which is why I focus on it. People say to me, well, why are you so interested in hormones? I believe that the endocrine system, and it's not that I just believe it, I know it, because if you look around, everything's controlled by it. And it's really important for you to understand how nutrition affects endocrinology. Super, super important. And I think that's all. There we have it, our beautiful picture that was taken at Shine. That's our NEPT group of who was there. There's also a whole bunch more who are not there, but yay, what a great picture. It's the first time I've seen this picture. They stuck that in there for me because I had an older one. Oh, wow, lovely. Oh, there's the older one that I had in there. Yay. So if you want to apply for a strategy session just to find out, go to neptapply.com. What we're going to do, we have to figure out where to put them, but I think what we can do is upload them to Facebook, to the Shine Facebook group, and that way people can download, because I know I took a picture with a lot of you at the end of it. So we're just kind of working through, we need to work through how the best way to get you those pictures are. And I haven't seen them yet. Like I said, this is just my first look-see. So I'm excited about it. Anybody want to open up their line? I'm feeling like I'm all alone here and I need to hear a voice. So somebody want to say anything, ask anything? I see nods, but I don't see anybody. I see Mary, Valerie, Martha, Annette, Marcy, Lynette, Diane. Okay, so then if we're done, Ghislaine. Hi, Ghislaine. I haven't seen you in a while. Lisa, Janine, and then a couple of people on the phone. So go ahead, and I'm going to unmute everyone. Lynn, how do I unmute everybody? There used to be a button that let me unmute people. Sounds like romper room. Yay, I have my magic mirror on the wall. Lynn, do you know how I unmute people? There used to be a thing that said unmute all. Everyone. I don't know how to do it anymore. That's sad. So unmute. Everybody unmute yourself. See if you can unmute yourself. No? Then why? Okay, that's the chat. Oh, I see. I got to go to manage participants. Unmute all. There we go. Hey, everybody. Say hi. Wave. Hi. Open up your
hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Who else is going to open up? There's Mary, Lynette, Lynn, Martha. Valerie, you don't have, I know, right, Valerie, you don't have that on your computer. Ghislaine, open up your line. Let's see you. Diane, Lisa, Janine. All right. Okay. On the count of three, everybody just say something nice to everybody else, whether it's thank you or goodbye or love. I don't care what you say. Just something, whatever word comes to your heart. Okay. So one, two, three.
Love
you. Bye. Much love.
Thanksgiving.
Much appreciation. I hope this was helpful. Can somebody give me feedback? Was this helpful? I know it was long.
Yes.
Was it helpful?
It was awesome.
Yeah?
Awesome.
Great info.
Great. And you'll have the video and you'll have the slides. And so it's just, you know, something that it's repetition. Thank you all. Thank you, Jay and Paula, for being here. And you guys are just soaking up the information. And it's awesome to see you. And we'll talk to you soon. And next week, don't forget next week on the 28th, we'll have a new link to get in with Dr. Joel Kahn and Dr. Caldwell Esselstein. And we're going to go into cardiovascular, food for cardiovascular health from the cardiologist. Yay, I love it. All right. Bye, everybody. Mwah.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you, Dr. Rita Marie.
You are so welcome. My pleasure. Our pleasure.